This is Free Talk Live, and of course, you can take control of the airwaves. You may join us here. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Did you once trust the government and now no longer do? With you tonight, it's Ian.
And Daryl, and you know, I don't think so. I honestly cannot recall ever actually trusting the government.
You know, I remember when I was young in like middle school, I remember thinking like the cops would come and they'd do like cop day where they'd bring all their toys out to the school and they'd like set up tables and the SWAT team would be there with their guns and all, you know, they actually flew the helicopter
but, like,
in.
Thinking that all of the cop stuff is cool. Is not the same as these people in government never do anything wrong.
Well, I don't think that I, at that young age, really had any assessment in my mind as to whether or not they did anything wrong or right. It just, I think
that's
I
don't think I ever trust it because, you know, like, I never really thought about government-y things until probably junior high, and then that was around the time of the Ruby Ridge incident and the Waco incident. And it's like, wait a second, they're killing people here.
I think I probably bought into the propaganda at the very least. And if you want to call that trusting them, I think you probably could. But it didn't last very long. All it took was a puff on a marijuana cigarette to make me realize I'd been lied to
by
these people.
How old were you the first time you ever used cannabis?
16.
I was 32.
Okay. So, good news. It looks like we're not the only ones who distrust the government. In fact, people around the globe are becoming less and less trusting.
Where's this coming from?
This is TheGuardian.com, published just yesterday by Patrick Wintour, their diplomatic editor. Weakened and distrusted, central governments around the world have been incapable of responding to the way the internet and social media have empowered populist but previously fringe groups, a unique worldwide survey of government communication chiefs has found. The survey spanning 40 countries is the first international review to reveal how deeply governments feel they're losing control and authority over communications. It shows that they have been collectively shaken by public distrust of governments and are struggling to keep pace with how modern voters gather information and form their opinions. The advent of fake news, the dissemination of knowingly inaccurate news, has only deepened the crisis. A study synthesizing the responses of more than 300 communication chiefs was undertaken by the advertising and strategy group WPP and steered by a global advisory board spanning Australia, Europe, Asia, and America, including leading academics and practitioners in communications, business, and the public sector. Professor Ngegerry Woods, dean of the Blavatnik School of Government at Oxford University, contributed from the UK. The shrinking of the center's power and its inability to communicate effectively has fueled populism, radicalization, and extremism, the survey finds. Quote, when people feel ignored, unheard, and unrepresented, they turn to alternative sources of information. If governments do not communicate with citizens properly, citizens will go somewhere else for information.
And sometimes they wind up going to news sites, and I'm using that in air quotes, and they wind up getting, you know, news that's not real. It's not technically satire.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, what people are calling fake news. And there's actually sort
like
of a
where
template
Bill,
for
like-
this to where, you know, there's a generator of insert celebrity name here, insert city, insert verb. So it's kind of like, you know, Mad Libs with the news. And people start believing some of it. And then there are people that can't tell satire from obviously fake news stories.
Like a good example of a fake news story was that some people were passing around a story about Bill Murray getting in a bar fight here in Keene, New Hampshire. And if you actually search for Bill Murray in bar fight, you find several iterations of the same story
and
from different towns.
Vice actually did a thing where they tried contacting one of the people that is listed as the registrar of several of these fake news sites. And they found that, you know, there's basically a template of insert celebrity, insert municipality, insert action. And, you know, change the words around a little bit in the sentences. And people buy it. And yep. then people see that. And then they go to The Onion and they can't tell that The Onion is satire, even though it clearly says somewhere on their site, this is satire.
Yeah, but not all their stories say that. And sometimes The Onion is so, like, ridiculously
right,
spot on.
Here's the thing. If you're not sure whether or not something is a real news story mm-hmm. or not, click the about
right.
on the website.
And see what they say about themselves.
If they either have no about page, or it says this is satire, or everything is made up, then it's not legitimate news.
Sure, but that requires, you know, somebody to actually dig a little bit and learn something about their news sources. And I think people should do that. They should take the time to
yes.
to check their
yes,
sources.
Yes, they should.
In this case, we're, our source is The Guardian, which is a well-respected news source from the UK. And they say here again that when people feel ignored, unheard, and represented, they turn to alternative sources of information. Now, it does say here that if governments don't communicate with citizens properly, they'll go somewhere else for the information, which, of course, you know, you shouldn't be getting your information from governments anyway, because, you know, even if they are communicating to you, they're probably lying to you. So,
yes.
you know, whatever information or press release the government, whichever government, it doesn't matter which one we're talking about here, you shouldn't trust it. So
right.
if you're looking for information, just consider whatever comes out of the government's mouth propaganda. Pure propaganda. So going on here, the study entitled Leaders Report, The Future of Government Communication finds, quote, the internet has loosened government's historical and collective grip on trust. It has transformed the role of government as providers of information. Social media has created an echo chamber of information that can filter out opposing views and commentary.
And that's actually backed by, you know, a lot of, I don't want to say science, but there are a lot of studies that show that people sort of isolate themselves in bubbles on social media
mm-hmm.
to where Trump supporters, by and large, are not communicating with Hillary supporters.
Sure, they'll even unfriend one another over some sort of perceived disagreement.
Yeah.
If you're a Trump supporter, I'm unfriending you now. You know, I've seen those posts.
I don't make posts, but if yeah. I see people, you know, constantly talking about, oh, Donald Trump can't do anything wrong. Yeah, I don't want to see that. You're gone.
Quote, it has created a sense that all information's free and equal. Citizens find it increasingly easy to communicate with one another, helping once marginalized groups create vocal and powerful social organizations. The technology has fractured audiences and enabled misinformation to be corroborated by anonymous users and politicians alike at ever-increasing speeds. Further, they
right, that's basically called confirmation bias of, I already believe that Barack Obama is the devil.
Who's
so
with
if
me?
I see a story that says Barack Obama is the devil, then that just confirms what I believe.
Right.
Or if I believe that Donald Trump is Hitler and I see an article that says that Donald Trump is Hitler, it confirms what I believe. Or if I believe that Donald Trump is great and I see something, it's confirmation bias. That's really all
sure.
it is.
They go on to say that extreme views can appear more mainstream when algorithms amplify them and reflect them back to others with similar views.
And again, that comes from creating the bubble to where if all you see are things that you pretty much agree with, it convinces you that more people agree with you than what really agree with you.
We're going to continue to dissect the story here. And, of course, you're welcome to share your thoughts and tell us your story. I mean, as I asked the question at the beginning of the show, were you at one time somebody who trusted the government? And what was it that changed that for you? I mean, for a lot of people, it's getting screwed by the government. I mean, that's usually what will do it instantly. We'll shift someone from being a believer into
yes.
a critic and a skeptic. The toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And you can share your thoughts, your experience. Certainly welcome. You can also take control of the airwaves and bring up whatever's on your mind. Coming up, we've got sex robots and sex dolls on deck. It's Free Talk Live.
Woohoo!
Yeah! Come on!
Talk Live. Dial on in toll free. Join us right here. Our number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We're talking about governments losing the trust of their people. Stories like this are some of my favorites. I do love it when government loses legitimacy.
Right, and you have to sort of wonder a little bit about whether or not, you know, incarcerating whistleblowers has anything to do with people not trusting governments anymore.
I would hope so. At the very least, you know, to those who are paying attention to the news, I'm sure there are plenty of people who are completely in the dark about all of that. Of course, for those of you maybe who didn't hear last night's show and haven't heard the news, Chelsea Manning is going to be released from prison with a commuted sentence down to being released in May 17th. So we talked in detail about that last night. It's huge news. It certainly doesn't mean that the government's going to stop prosecuting whistleblowers, but nonetheless, it is a little bit of good news. And this is also good news that people are losing their faith in the government. We'll continue that discussion. You're welcome to join us here. But you know what? We've been talking a lot about MyPillow, and it's not just Free Talk Live hosts who have enjoyed the MyPillow. We're now getting some feedback from some of our listeners. One of the ladies on the Free Talk Live AMP group recently posted her thoughts about the MyPillow, and she's liking it. If it's not the best pillow you've ever used, you can actually send it back to MyPillow, and you can get your money back and get your purchase price back. So you go to MyPillow.com, and you can use code FTL. In fact, you should, in order to get your MyPillow at half price. It's a great pillow because it's designed to fit to the shape of your body and hold your neck in the proper position. And it also is washable. So that's a feature I don't think I've ever seen in any other pillow. You can wash it and dry it in your washer and dryer. It's awesome. MyPillow.com. Use code FTL. Get one pillow at half price or two for the price of one. And by the way, there's a 10-year warranty on the MyPillow. So you get 60 days to decide if you like it or not. And if you don't, you can send it back. Then again, there's also that 10-year warranty. So they really stand behind their product and its quality. MyPillow.com. Code FTL. There's a story here from The Guardian. Seems to be focusing more on the government's information that they give to people and whether or not people are trusting that. But it does touch on the idea that people are becoming less trustworthy of the state in general. And that is what I like to hear, because ultimately governments are going to have to lose their credibility and lose their legitimacy in order for people to truly leave the artifice of the state behind in the dustbin of history, which is what I would love to see happen, just in the same way that we've left chattel slavery behind in the dustbin of history. I think the idea of the state also needs to be kicked to the curb. But as long as people believe that electing the right person is going to change everything, then we're never going to fix this problem.
So the numbers that you have, or I'm curious, do you actually have
numbers?
There's
no numbers here. Not in this version of the story. Now, there may be another version. This is just basically, it's kind of targeted towards, it's actually targeted towards governments. So this survey was done to kind of give the governments a heads up. Hey, you know, shake the baby. You're losing these people. The study's entitled Leaders Report, The Future of Government Communications.
Because I did find some numbers. They're a little old, but I did find some numbers.
Okay.
And it's specifically only in the United States. And the question was, of Americans, how much do you trust the government?
Right.
And 19% of those responded said that they trust the government always or most of the time.
Was this the one where it broke it down and it actually asked people, you know, do you trust the military? Do you trust the police? Do you trust the politicians? And like a bunch of people trusted the police, like a shocking number of Americans trusted the police.
I'm looking here, and again, just, you know, a cursory look. They asked people if it was a major role for government to keep the country safe from terrorism, respond to natural disasters, and these are different categories, ensure safe food and medicine, manage immigration, maintain infrastructure. I'm not seeing police mentioned specifically here, but they also, after asking people if they thought it was a major role for government, if they thought that the government was doing a good job.
And what did they say to that?
Well, So, for instance, managing immigration, 81% said that is a major role for government. 28% said that they thought that the government was doing a good job.
Okay.
69% of respondents said that they thought that ensuring a basic income for those over the age of 65, that was a major role for government. 48% said they thought that the government was doing a good job. 47% thought that advancing space exploration was a major role for government. 51% thought that the government was doing a good job. So more people thought the government was doing a good job on space stuff than what thought that doing space stuff was a major role for government.
NASA is certainly one of the least offensive federal programs, along with the National Weather Service. Those two are probably, you know, two of the better ones, but even then, they're outclassed by private enterprise, like the XPRIZE and the space race kind of situation. And then also, of course, the variety of weather options out there that are much better than
and
the government.
And then I found another article from the Washington Post titled, Americans Are Losing Faith in Democracy and Each Other. And I've not gotten a chance to look into this
yet. Let's talk more about the original story here from The Guardian. Again, they're writing this to kind of give a heads up to government administrative types. Like, hey, you guys are screwing it up. Here's the survey from, you know, 40 countries that says that people don't trust you that much anymore. Despite the glut of information, communication managers claim the public feel, quote, more apprehensive than perhaps at any time since the end of the Cold War. The report suggests further that, quote, citizens are more powerful than ever in terms of unlimited access to information and can garner support on issues from like-minded individuals faster than the speed with which even the nimblest administration can respond. They have more up-to-date tech than most governments. And I think that's absolutely a true statement. I mean, I remember it wasn't 10 years ago that we were talking about how the FBI was still having trouble with email. Like, they still had a bunch of their agents who didn't have email accounts, and they had, now maybe they fixed this in the last decade, but it was interesting because this was in the middle of the aughts, so only 10 years ago, and all of us have had email for, you know, a decade already, the government was still having a difficult time implementing it or finding IT people who were willing to stay on the job more than 3 months without quitting, just in frustration of having to work with bureaucracy. And so, of course, governments are behind the ball. They're slow. We've talked about the government's incentives or their lack of incentives a number of times here on Free Talk Live. They don't have the incentive to keep up with the times. And it can be a challenge to keep up with technology, but governments are, you know, worse than a lot of companies are. I mean, certainly companies are guilty in some cases of holding on to technology longer than they probably should.
Right. They would probably still be using the ENIAC machine.
I don't know what that is.
That was the first computer that was basically a glorified calculator that was about the size of the studio here.
Was it that ran on punch cards? Was it that one?
I believe the initial computers all ran on punch cards. But, you know, basically this thing could just do calculations and had no internal memory. They would probably still be using that if they could.
Our toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE. You can join us. Share your thoughts. 855-450-3733. Do you trust the government? We just got our new Rye Guys t-shirts. I chose the Power Corrupts shirt and the I'm Already Against the Next War shirt. These quality shirts look good and feel good, and they feature clever, thought-provoking designs to promote freedom, peace, and healthy skepticism of modern mythologies. The Rye Guys donate a portion of proceeds to antiwar.com and the Future of Freedom Foundation. Enter coupon code FTL at checkout to get 15% off your order. That's ryguys.com, W-R-Y-guys.com, ryguys.com. It's a Rye wit for today's shit. It's Free Talk Live. Dial in toll free and join us. Here, our number is 855-450-FREE. We're talking about people's trust in government. According to one report that's actually targeted at governments, like to let them know, hey, you're losing your legitimacy. You might want to do something about that if you want to retain your power and, you know, people respecting you. The toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE. If you want to tell your story about how you lost your belief in the state, or maybe you still do trust the government. Is there somebody out there that actually trusts the government? I'd love to hear from you.
Well, I did mention this survey from, not actually from the Washington Post, but they reported on it. They asked the question, when it comes to American democracy, which is closest to your view? I have lost faith, I have faith, I have never had faith, or no response. How many respondents, or what percentage of respondents do you think answered, I have never had faith?
And this was done this last year?
Survey results were released October 7th.
American people who have never had faith in democracy.
In the American democracy.
20%.
6.
Okay, wow.
How many have lost faith in the American democracy?
40%.
You are exactly correct.
Wow.
How many have faith?
Whatever the remainder is.
No, because there were some people that gave no answer.
Oh, okay. People that have faith, 50%.
52.
Okay.
And apparently it's not just the American democracy or trust of government that is declining.
Hold on, before you go on. I wonder if those numbers changed after the election at all.
Possibly. I don't know, because they also asked people, if your preferred presidential candidate ends up losing, will you accept the results as legitimate?
I see.
31% said yes, definitely. 39% said probably. 18% said it's unlikely. And 10% said definitely will not. Hmm. So the numbers probably shifted a little bit. But right. I don't think it would be drastic. But for over 40 years, Gallup has measured levels of confidence in an array of institutions, such as media, organized religion, public schools, banks, unions, big business. Congress may regularly receive the lowest rating, as only 9% expressed a great deal or quite a lot of confidence in Congress in a recent survey, which was released in June. But most institutions within and outside of government are at or near historic lows, and yet the problem is even worse. Americans don't even trust each other.
Mm.
In the survey, they found that only 31% said that most people can be trusted, whereas 67% said you need to be very careful in dealing with other people.
Well, you can't blame people when you've got the government out there, which is this kind of tool of violence that people can use to force their viewpoint on others. I can understand why somebody wouldn't be trusting towards other folks, especially if they feel like those other folks are out to get them, specifically by using the government's tool against them, which is ultimately what seems to happen every few years. You know, these people struggle over controlling this violent tool, and then they try to turn it against the people that they want to see behave.
But most people, not just most Americans, but most people do not see government as a violent tool.
That's a good point.
And they don't see that, oh, my neighbor is trying to use government against me. They'll say, oh, the government is trying to do fill in the blank, but they don't see it as my neighbor is asking them to do this. Sometimes they might, you know, if it's specifically, here's a petition signed by your neighbors to, you know, remove that junk out of your yard or whatever it might be. So, you know, every now and then they might see it as actually their neighbors. But by and large, I don't think that most people see the government as a tool for doing harm, or that their neighbors are the ones requesting.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. They may not see it as a tool for doing harm, but people who are being harmed by the government hopefully will see it as the government is harming them.
Because hopefully,
I mean, the people that are mad about Donald Trump being elected realize that they may be targeted. They realize that if they're not in power, then those in power may be going after them and the things that they like to do.
One thing that is really interesting, and I saw a variant of this 8 years ago, where now it's saying, if you're worried about how much power Donald Trump is going to have, maybe you shouldn't have spent the last 8 years increasing Barack Obama's power. But something similar happened 8 years ago where people were saying, if you're worried what Barack Obama's going to wind up doing, maybe you shouldn't have, you know, tried giving George Bush all of this power.
A couple of interesting quotes here. I pulled up the executive summary of this study that the Guardian was writing about here, and we've got a little bit more from the Guardian, but just to kind of insert a couple of quotes, I was looking to see if there would be any statistics in even the executive summary, and there's really nothing. So it seems like, oh, here we go. Here's a little something. Only 40% of citizens trust their government, compromising the willingness of citizens and businesses to respond to public policies. This is under the section called What Are the Key Challenges Facing Government Communicators, which trust is this one here. Declining levels of trust in government have undermined the connection between those who are governed and those who govern them. Even in countries with the highest levels of trust, 1 in 4 citizens do not trust their government is doing the right thing. And then they've got on the next page just kind of this global map with quotes from different folks from around the globe, these communications leaders. These are people within government whose job it is to communicate to the people. Someone from Western Europe, they don't give the name of the quote. They just give a quote and then, you know, where this is from. Communications leader in Western Europe. Quote, there is a heightened individualization. We can no longer send a uniform message to the entire public. It's not possible. It doesn't work anymore. A communications leader in Africa says this, quote, all over the world, the authority of government is being eroded. There is a sense that citizens are beginning to doubt whether government actually can make a difference in their lives. So when I read things like that from people working in the government, it just warms my heart.
It would be a little bit better if he said people are beginning to question whether or not governments are even needed.
That's kind of what he said. I mean, to some extent.
No, that's not what he said.
He says they're beginning to doubt whether government actually can make a difference in their lives. If they're not making a difference, then that suggests that they're not needed, right?
No, because if you find the people that say, yeah, I don't think that the local government can affect my life at all. Okay, so you're ready to get rid of government, but who would build the roads?
Oh,
what
yeah.
about the schools?
Well, right. I mean, this is
the fact that, you know, this isn't going to make an impact on my life. People aren't looking at, oh, the road that is being privately funded could still be funded or, you know, being built by a private company could still wind up being built without the local government. They just look, well, what are they doing specifically for me?
No, I get what you're saying there. And this isn't this news story, this discussion that we're having doesn't necessarily mean that people are becoming libertarian. I mean, it's just a good thing that people don't trust governments. That it's only a beginning baby step, basically. But it's a good news. It's a little bit of good news. I mean, you just read some statistics earlier that suggested that, you know, people like the idea of government being involved in immigration. And what that means is they like control.
Right.
They like the idea of governments controlling things. They don't think the government's doing a good enough job of being statist enough, of
right.
being controlling enough. So just because somebody doesn't trust the government doesn't mean that they don't believe in government. So
right.
I think it is important to put that out there.
Right. And I've seen stuff to where, you know, other similar surveys have come out and people then, you know, turn it around. Oh, 70% of Americans say that they're libertarian because they don't trust them. No, that's not at all what is being said. You cannot make that assertion and expect anybody to consider you to at all have any sort of relevancy.
Right. You can't jump to the conclusion that somebody is against the state simply because they don't trust the state.
Right.
But not trusting the state is a important first step to opening minds to other alternatives and options. And you can share your thoughts with us here on the erosion of trust in the state. 855-450-FREE or Skype in at lrn.fm. It is Free Talk Live. You can dial in toll free. Bring up whatever's on your mind. Our number here is 855-450-FREE. Though right now, if you've got some comments on the story about the government losing the trust of the people, not just the American government, but governments all around the world. There's a survey that's been done, and it's being reported to various different governments around the globe. They spanned 40 different countries in what was called the Leaders Report, The Future of Government Communication, basically finding that governments around the globe are piss poor at doing communication with their people, and they're losing trust as time goes on. In fact, the executive summary of the report says only 40% of citizens around the globe trust in their government, and I presume that's, you know, noteworthy because it's likely down over time. The toll-free number, if you want to join us here, 855-450-FREE. Better late than never. Jay Noon with us here. Hey, Jay.
Hey.
Thanks for coming in here tonight.
Oh,
comments
absolutely.
On the story thus far? You say you've been listening on the way in.
Yeah, so I was listening on the way in, and, you know, when I was a kid, there was a guy... he was a DARE officer, and I don't know if he wasn't a DARE officer maybe until I was in high school, but he was basically a guy who kind of hung out. His name was Jimmy Lynch, Palmer cop. Mm-hmm. Super nice guy. And he was definitely, you know, as a youngster, I definitely trusted that guy. But, like, he knew my father, he knew my grandparents and stuff. He'd been around town for a while. But he was, like, one of them decent, like, old school. You know, I remember one of the first times I got pulled over, I was horsing around, and he pulled me over, and he's like, "Hey, laddie, why don't you calm it on down a little bit so we see you next week when school starts?" You know, mm-hmm. I was like 17 years old, and he didn't ask me for a license or anything. He just was like, "Hey, chill out," you know. But he was one of them guys who was just cool. But then again, there's
not, you know, looking to make an arrest, just looking to keep the peace.
Just like, and right before I retired, I was talking to him about, like, things, and, you know, probably, I think he retired about 7, 8, 10 years ago. And, you know, he was like, "Well, I got a few more years dealing with this crap, and, you know, I collect my retirement." And, you know, he really wasn't happy with the way, you know, policing had become, and the agenda of policing and the agenda of government, because mm-hmm. he was one of them old timers. He was a serve and protect kind of guy, and he wasn't into revenue. And even, like, in high school, when he was, like, talking to us kids, we were all about getting our license and stuff, and he's talking about, you know, the rules of the road and speeding. And, of course, I had some, you know, really good questions for him. And one of the things that he did say is, he goes, "Well, the agenda is always pushed as safety when it comes to motor vehicle enforcement." And he says, right to us high school kids, he goes, "But it's got a lot of revenue. It's got a lot to do with it. I mean, it isn't said to us directly, but indirectly it is, you know, hey, let's... you know, you need to earn your paychecks.
Yeah, keep those tickets coming in."
So he was definitely an honest guy. I got no reason to ever believe, you know, he was anything, you know, but honest. And so
you trusted him individually.
Oh, absolutely. I trust him individually. Even one of the cops I dealt with the other night, I would consider, on an individual basis, I do trust a man. Mm. And the other cop, I don't even know. But, you know, I got pulled over the other night in town. But, yeah, so... individually, there are some agents in government I trust. In fact, one of my best friends now, the reason I met her is she was worked for the Department of Agriculture in Massachusetts. And she actually came to a stable to do one of these stable inspections that I was helping a girl fix up some stuff at mm-hmm. about 10, 12 years ago. In our very first meeting, I told her she was trespassing and get off the property. And
now you're best friends.
She's like one of my best friends. She may even be listening to the show tonight. She's been listening. She's an Uber driver. You know, so individually, you know, just because people work for government doesn't mean they're bad. But, you know, governments collectively, true. You know, they can't be trusted because they don't even trust themselves. You know, I mean, they, you know, they're all like attacking one another all the time.
We can continue the discussion. Let's go to your calls and thoughts here. We'll talk to Zach in Raleigh, North Carolina, listening online via the TuneIn app. Hello, Zach.
Hey, Ian, how's it going?
Hey, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, so did you guys catch the Cantwell-Kokesh debate that happened Tuesday?
No, I tuned in just after it had ended. I mean, we'd finished up our show, and I happened to see it as I was uploading the video of our archive to YouTube. I happened to see that Cantwell was streaming it live on his channel, so I tuned in, and it was literally the very end. So I did watch them arm wrestle each other. At the very end of it, and Adam Kokesh pretty soundly defeated Chris with both the right and left arms.
Yeah, so I realize with the time conflict, of course, you weren't able to catch it, but I do highly recommend you check it out. And I think that it was a really, really, really good debate. It was a fantastic conversation and two very different perspectives coming together, you know, two prominent perspectives.
So what was the topic of the debate?
Love versus hate.
It was all over the place. I guess you could say, I mean, I think calling a position hate is kind of a straw man. I think that it was more of Cantwell. You know, Cantwell's like a libertarian brutalist, if you can even call him that. He takes nationalist.
Does he even call himself a libertarian anymore?
I don't think he, at least last I talked to him, I don't think he would use the term libertarian. I mean, he certainly still understands the concepts of libertarianism, but he seems to have gone in a more conservative direction.
Right, right. So it's very. I think he's still an ANCAP, but whatever. So it was really, really interesting. And I think
ANCAP means anarcho-capitalist.
Yeah,
I don't know if he's an anarchist anymore. I don't know about that.
In the debate, he referred to himself as a very right libertarian.
Okay, so he did use the word libertarian.
Yeah. It was actually pretty interesting, the debate last night.
Yeah.
I kind of love the pick on Cantwell a little bit about it tonight, just because I listened to it last night, and it kind of reminded me of the soapbox derby, MK Lords versus Chris Cantwell at Porkfest a few years ago. I don't know if you guys saw that, but that was hilarious.
So any other observations about it that you want to share, Zach?
Well, so I think that one of the really interesting things that came up was actually he was asked a question by an observer about would he endorse Kokesh for the presidential run. If Kokesh were to be the favored person to win, would he endorse him? And it was really interesting because he kind of Cantwell brought up the whole thing of, you know, so say a principled libertarian does get into the presidential office, they are going to do, obviously, dismantle the government in the most peaceful way possible. You know,
no, they won't.
The aim.
Just the president himself cannot dismantle the government. They would need the cooperation of Congress in order to do that, as
well,
I understand it.
Kokesh's stance is that he would dismantle the government through executive order. That's what he said almost verbatim.
And he's said that numerous times, and again, I don't think that you could do that as the president.
I mean, there may be some things that the president could do, like bring the military home or something like that. But
right.
Dismantle the military? I don't think he'd be able to do that alone.
Well what he's saying is he would sign an executive order that says the United States federal government no longer exists, period, the end, have a good day.
It's like the exact language he uses, too.
It'd be fun to watch. I mean, it'd be awesome. But, he's not going to win, so it's not going to happen.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But I think that it is actually, it opens up a discussion to the motivation of libertarians who are trying to work within the government. And I think that it is almost the equivalent of, you know, a young child kicking and screaming and complaining about things when they actually don't have any means to do anything about it. And I think that it does.
You're talking about libertarians in general?
Poorly. Not libertarians in general, because I have, you know, certain people really do have a really good, libertarianism presents a lot of fantastic arguments and really, really good economic ideology, and the NAP is fantastic. But
that's the non-aggression
that,
principle. When you say NAP, that's what you mean.
But I do think that there is this thing with libertarians who try to achieve public office where it is kind of this thing where, like, dude, you're not going to accomplish anything other than maybe, you know, informing a few people, and you're informing the populace, which is, you know, pretty hard to work
with.
Well,
that's important to inform people about the ideas of liberty, and if running for political office gives you a platform from which somebody will pay attention, there's a good chance that somebody's going to come on board, or at the very least evaluate the ideas in a way that they never have before. I think there's real value. I mean, are you poo-pooing the idea of libertarians running for office here?
A little bit. And
what would you propose?
I supported Donald Trump in this previous election. I worked with his campaign here in Raleigh and did some get out the vote stuff. And I think that it really does. We need to look at practical solutions to the problems we're faced with. And I really do think
like
that
what?
Libertarians running almost. I mean, okay, so say you get President Trump in office. He's had a lot of rhetoric about bringing the troops home. A lot of rhetoric about, you know, shoring up our military at home, kind of protectionist stuff. And I feel like that is so much better than the alternative. And when you have libertarians like Gary Johnson getting in there and distracting people from the, you know, the two people that obviously...
Well, first of all, Gary Johnson isn't a libertarian.
You seem to be thinking that there should only ever be two candidates and anything else is somehow horrible and bad and people are stealing votes.
I want to come talk more about this. If you can hang on, Zach, we'll bring you back in hour number two, because what I'm hearing from you, I asked you, you know, what do you want to do to spread ideas of freedom? And you said Donald Trump. That doesn't work. That's not spreading the ideas of freedom. So it sounds to me like you don't really care about that at all. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up.
A funny thing happens when you don't advertise. Nothing. Modern advertisers have been trained to look for trackability in their advertising, and web search ads are great for that. They also help you get the consumer that's looking for products like yours in the moment. But they're expensive, and they do nothing to convince people to try your product segment in the first place. They help you get a bigger piece of the pie, but branding mediums like radio grow the pie itself. Free Talk Live's on more than 150 stations, and we can help advertisers with little budgets and big ones. Send me an email, mark@freetalklive.com. It's mark@freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live.
It is Free Talk Live, and we're launching into the second hour of the program with you in the studio tonight. It's Ian,
Jay,
and Daryl.
We've got Skype. The Skype username is lrn.fm. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. For those of you just tuning in the first hour, we were talking about a study that's been done globally, asking people about, you know, their trust in government. And apparently it is declining.
As is trust in one another.
Yeah. It's 40%, according to this study, of citizens around the globe trust their government. And to me, that's good news. It's a starting point. It led to a larger discussion. We're going to your calls and thoughts. Of course, you can also bring up anything that you want. And on the way, sex robots, sex dolls, what one woman describes her night with a male sex doll and what that was like. We can share that with you. And then you have a related sex robot story.
I do.
As well. But let's go back to Zach in Raleigh, North Carolina. Zach, you were asking us if we had seen the debate between Christopher Cantwell, a former Free Talk Live co-host, the only co-host to ever have been kicked off the air, I believe, here on Free Talk Live. Due to, well, basically racism. And then also he was debating Adam Kokesh of the Adam versus the Man show. We've had him on the show as a guest a number of times over the years. They were debating down in Miami yesterday. Jay, you have listened to the debate.
That's right.
And it got us into a conversation, Zach, about what you were talking about just before we went away to the news break there. You were saying that you didn't think that libertarian campaigns were really worthwhile. And I wanted you to have a chance to continue sharing your thoughts.
Okay, thank you. And so my basic point, I would say, is that I make political decisions, as in who I'm going to vote for, based off of what is most conducive to a free society, right? Is that my end game is, you know, a free society where people can live without worrying about other people using violence against them preemptively. I would like if everyone would operate under the non-aggression principle. I would think that'd be best. And I think the best way to get there is to vote for politicians whose agendas are more conducive to that free society. And I do believe that you have to be pragmatic in how you vote for people. Your political moves should be pragmatic. And I do think that Donald Trump was by far, his agenda is the most conducive to a free society of the option. Would it have been nice to have Adam Kokesh as president? Sure. Would it have been nice to have, I mean, Gary Johnson, I don't even know if he would have been better than Donald Trump, to be honest. But this is the thing, is that, and I think that libertarian candidates often distract libertarians who are usually relatively smart people and usually have pretty good stances on these things.
So let me ask this question, because it sounds like you're saying that there should not be candidates other than the Republicans and Democrats because anything else is a distraction. Is that what you're saying?
That's not what I'm saying.
Okay, so there should be Green Party candidates to distract the Democrats, and there should be Socialist Party candidates to distract the Democrats, but there should not be Libertarian Party or Constitution Party because that will distract the Republicans?
No, I'm actually not saying that you should vote upon party lines. I'm saying you should vote on whichever candidate is most conducive to a free society.
And it sounds like you're saying you should vote for whichever candidate you think has the best chance of winning.
To a degree.
Well, this last election isn't a good example because there wasn't really a libertarian candidate. I mean, there was Gary Johnson, and he had the label libertarian, but he wasn't a libertarian. So I can understand why somebody would have a difficult time voting for Gary Johnson. I did not vote for Gary Johnson.
Nor did I.
I also did not vote for Donald Trump or any of the other mainstream candidates. I voted for you, Daryl. I wrote your name in. But ultimately, I can understand that. So it's a bad example for an election with any kind of liberty choice. But there are elections where there are actual, real, principled libertarians who are running for office. Would you say that that people should vote for them or ignore them?
I mean, honestly, I do think that you should just ignore them because, unfortunately, it is the reality of the situation, right? I mean, the masses of the United States, the voters, are not going to vote for a third party. I do think
that's
that
actually not
society,
true. There are a couple dozen people in state legislatures across the country that are neither Republicans nor Democrats.
Well, when you're comparing...
I apologize.
If you're comparing a federal
election...
I mean, on
a federal level.
Yeah, comparing a federal election to, you know, say New Hampshire local and state elections is two totally different things, because, or any state or local election is totally different. In fact, on local level, especially here in New Hampshire, it is worth voting, I believe. But the federal election, I mean, it's just, it really comes down to who counts all these votes everywhere. The whole system to me is just so corrupt and, you know, manipulated.
I'm not so concerned with voting in a federal election because I agree with you. It's corrupt. It doesn't matter. Ultimately, the libertarians have very little chance of winning. I could live just fine without ever casting a vote in a federal election ever again. But ultimately, I have supported principled candidates in the past because they get the message out. So whether it's Ron Paul or Harry Brown, the 2000 and 1996 libertarian candidate, these candidates who are very principled in their message of liberty, I put money behind them and I put effort behind those campaigns. Are you also saying that libertarians should not assist with campaigns of other libertarians or just simply not vote for them?
I mean, if you want to donate money to help a libertarian candidate get the word out, then I feel like that's a good thing to do. But
everybody should ignore them.
So you're only talking about voting, though. You're only saying they should be ignored on the ballot.
Right. And only because that if there is, and I mean, honestly, if it's a situation where it's like McCain versus Obama, honestly, there's no difference. Go ahead and write in Ron Paul. I don't care. But I'm talking in a situation like we had this election cycle where you really did have, I mean, Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump, one of those two choices is going to be much, much more conducive to that free society I mentioned earlier.
It's not. Well, I mean, that's your belief, but I don't know if it's really based on any evidence. I mean, you know, we don't know what this guy's going to do at this point.
Well, even just based on the rhetoric. I mean, and this is the thing.
Which part of his rhetoric? He started off talking about how he wanted to bomb the S out of ISIS and build a border wall, and then he turned into, you know, like, I don't necessarily want to bomb people, and let's give, you know, health insurance to everybody.
Well, I mean, George Bush had the rhetoric of no nation building and smaller government, and then Barack Obama had the rhetoric of closing down Guantanamo and hope
ending
and change.
The wars, but yet his final year of president, he oversaw the bombing of seven different countries.
So, I mean, I get it. You believe Donald Trump is going to be somebody different. He's going to be bringing some sort of different viewpoint to the White House, and, you know, maybe time will show that you're right about that, but call me a skeptic. He's just a politician as far as I'm concerned.
But he isn't a politician, and that's the
yes
thing.
He is,
and
by I'm definition he is.
He's had to broker
now,
all kinds
what
of business
saying,
deals.
He wasn't a career politician.
Okay.
That's what he did for a living.
Not a career liar.
Well, you don't know how much of a liar he is. I mean, we really don't know that much about the guy. He's been on television.
We know that he has been a businessman for a really long time. He's used eminent domain to wind up, you know, getting a lot of business deals done. We know that he's donated to the Clintons in the past. And, you know, he's bought politicians previously, but he himself, aside from a very brief run in 2000 for the Reform Party presidential nomination, has never run for office before. But, you know, let's just forget that brief run in 2000 where he sought the Reform Party nomination. He's never run for office ever except for that one time, but we're not talking about that. The man is a politician. Simply because he's not been previously elected to anything does not mean he's not a politician.
So did Cantwell, in the debate between Cantwell and Kokesh, did he agree to endorse Kokesh if Kokesh gets the Libertarian Party nomination?
I predict he kind of danced around it. He said that he would, but he would have a lot of issues with it, and just in the sense that, I mean, the way Kokesh, basically what Kokesh said he would do had he become president, what he would do, it's ridiculous. And like I said, it sounds kind of like a angry kid being like, oh yeah, well, I'll just write executive orders. Like,
I'm actually surprised Cantwell danced around it. I figured he would say no, that he would endorse Trump for his reelection. Thanks for the call tonight, Zach. I appreciate it, because I mean, he's probably going to run again, right?
Unless he gets killed.
Toll free number here, 855-450-FREE. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. Dial in toll-free. Bring up what you want. Our number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Coming up in just over a month from now, we're going to be at Anarchapulco. And by we, I mean me and Jay Noon and Mark Edge. Thankfully, Daryl, you will be staying here to hold down the fort.
Yeah.
Beautiful Keene, New Hampshire, as we are just sweating on the hot, dreadful beaches of Acapulco, Mexico. It will be a tough, tough job, and I think we're going to be able to handle it. Mark actually is on the line with us here just by total coincidence. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Ian.
You are actually in Cayo Costa. Where is that?
It's just a little north of Fort Myers on the intercoastal.
Okay. You're boating around?
Yep, boating around.
Now, are you going to take the boat to Acapulco?
No. It just doesn't go that fast, Ian. It's 6 knots. You could. It's the pace of a jog.
So, like, you'd have to leave now if you wanted to get down to, basically.
That kind of, yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's happening February 25th through the 28th. It's going to be at the Mundo Imperial Resort and Expo, and Acapulco.com is where you can go to get tickets. They're going to be bringing together hundreds of principled anarchists to share ideas on how to live free and escape the clutches of the state and central banks. Lots of great speakers will be in attendance, and they'll be discussing entrepreneurship, investments, politics, philosophy, health, sustainability, lifestyles, and personal relationships for 4 days among the sun and beaches of a world-class resort. And we had Jeff Berwick on the show a couple weeks ago. It sounds like it's going to be a heck of an event, that they really upgraded the facility, and it sounds like they're putting quite a bit of money into it as well. So we'll look forward to seeing you there. You can go to anarchapulco.com. Again, it's February 25th through the 28th.
Now, I'm looking at a map here, and because Acapulco is on the Pacific side,
yeah,
of Mexico, Mark could probably go on his boat to the Yucatan Peninsula and then somehow go across Mexico.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, hey, what are you calling in about tonight?
Well, I got to tell you, I got to place the story first. So I was on Facebook. Somebody was talking about weight loss and working out and all this stuff. And I said that I felt like my last and final hope for weight loss was a tapeworm. And obviously,
oh, God,
it's a joke. But
the salmon.
Because I have an inquisitive – what's that?
The salmon. Somebody posted about the salmon.
Is that what it was? Yeah. And I then began to research tapeworms for weight loss. So,
it works good
not
for
that
horses.
I necessarily intended to get a tapeworm, just that I was going to research them and find out. Turns out, Ian, that it is illegal to sell tapeworms for weight loss.
Okay, so you buy it for another reason, and then you use it for that reason, and then the person that sells it to you doesn't know that you're using it for weight loss.
Yes,
okay.
I understand.
I got to say, don't know a whole lot about tapeworms. They grow, right? Like, the more that they eat?
Yes.
Yes.
So at some point, you'd have to extract it from?
Take large amounts of fiber and X-lax.
And then it'll come out?
Yes.
I don't know about that.
It sounds dangerous.
I've been in a slaughterhouse.
It is dangerous.
I've been in the slaughterhouse when they've been slaughtering animals, and I've seen tapeworms come at it, go into 55-gallon drums that they put these parasites into. I've seen tapeworms actually come out of large animals, and it is pretty nasty.
Are they basically going to deprive you of nutrients in your body? I mean, you're going to die, essentially. You're going to weaken yourself, and it sounds like a terrible idea.
Yeah. You will weaken yourself, but you will not necessarily die.
I don't think he's going to.
You can die.
I'm getting plenty of nutrients. You know, nutrients aren't my problem. But nonetheless, I'm not advocating taking of tapeworms for weight loss.
Thank goodness.
As Jay and Daryl are pointing out here, there are lots of different types of tapeworms. There's the kind that'll fill 50-gallon drums. There's the kind that'll get, you know, a couple of feet long. It really just depends. There are hundreds, maybe thousands of different types of tapeworms. Then there's all kinds of other parasitic worms besides that. But the fact is there is now a black market in weight loss tapeworms. And you know why.
Can you get them on Tor?
You can get them online.
Are they on Alpha Bay?
You just have to go.
Do they deliver it live, or do you get like a little tapeworm egg? How does that work?
I don't know the answer to that. I would presume it was tapeworm eggs. That would be my guess.
Nasty.
But you know, I just did a quick Google search, and it turns out you can buy tapeworms, right?
People it's get like tapeworms Darryl all the time.
Terrifying. That's absolutely horrible.
You just can't say to somebody in America that I'm going to eat this tapeworm, right?
Yeah.
but people are doing this, and the reason they're doing it is because the government has created a black market. Now, if doctors could, you know, I don't know, deal in the proper – surely out of all the tapeworms there are.
Are you saying there's a medical reason to ingest a tapeworm? I don't think a doctor could possibly recommend that to somebody because they're not supposed to do harm
to
people.
Well, at one time, doctors recommended leeching.
Yes, but that's because they didn't know what they were doing. So at this point, we know what a tapeworm does, and that would harm the patient.
Yes, a tapeworm can help you lose weight if used properly.
I would say that there is no proper way to do something like this, and any doctor who would recommend something like that is completely improper in what he or she is doing. And a doctor that is sensible would recommend moderating one's intake of calories and some exercise. I think that's probably
the best
solution.
That's precisely what they do. Yeah. And a lot of people just don't find that as a solution, right? Like, I know
because
that
a lot of people don't have willpower.
They're lazy, yeah.
Well, they don't have willpower, but they can buy a tapeworm. So, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of solutions out there for people who don't
have
tapeworms.
Are we really talking about this?
I can see how this would work, and I could see how this would be totally viable. I mean, I've been like studying parasites a good part of my life. I had a herd of dairy goats, and monitoring parasites in their fecal matter was like a thing that we did constantly. Same thing with dairy cows, horses, because we don't want to be putting wormer in animals that don't need it. And I tell you what, this is like, as soon as these animals start losing weight and you're putting a lot of nutrition to them and a lot of food and they shouldn't be losing weight, it is most definitely some form of parasite, and it is generally tapeworm.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see how this would work.
And the only point I'm trying to make is that if the government didn't make tapeworms illegal, then you would have, because I don't trust a doctor at this point to give me the truth on tapeworms. Because everything online says, you know, it's medically unviable. It's a terrible idea.
It's a conspiracy.
You know,
the truth about tapeworms.
They're trying to keep the truth away from you, Mark.
Hey, that's what Dare Class did, my friend.
Is this a joke? I don't get this, man. Is this some weird joke?
It's not a weird joke. Do you understand how black markets work? Do you understand?
Yeah, I do.
That's what's happened with tapeworms.
Okay.
I'm not advocating the taking of tapeworm.
Okay,
I'm telling
good.
You right now, if you take the wrong tapeworm, it'll kill your ass.
Absolutely.
But I am saying that, it would be an interesting idea if they did a little research on tapeworms. Maybe they could find the right one.
Did the research and figured out that there's not a right
maybe
one.
Maybe they figured out that shortcuts to weight loss always have negative consequences. Thanks, Mark, for your call tonight. Good luck. Aye. Toll-free number 855-450-FREE. If it's an easy way to lose weight, there's probably some sort of consequence waiting for you somewhere.
Yeah.
It's Free Talk Live. What do you shop for that you could otherwise buy at Amazon? Pretty much everything, right? Amazon has competitive pricing and they deliver, and that's a big plus. If you could plan ahead in your shopping, would you be interested in saving up to 33%? There's a catch. You have to do your shopping in Bitcoin. But imagine those savings. It's like a huge raise. All you have to do is go to saveitpurse.com. We've saved thousands, and you can too. Plan ahead and save. Saveitpurse.com. Free Talk Live, and you dial toll-free. If you want to join us here, our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We do have Skype, and the Skype username is lrn.fm. With you in the studio tonight, you've got Ian,
Jay,
and Daryl.
Also, I do want to let you know about how you can get some web hosting from one of the top web hosting companies out there at 50% off. That's 50% off for Free Talk Live listeners like you. It's HostGator. You go to HostGator.com/FTL. HostGator makes it easy. If you've never started a website before, it's easier than ever because they offer a simple one-click, easy installation for WordPress. Now, if you don't know what that is, WordPress is like the go-to content management system for websites. It's the system that I use for almost every website that I administer, and I administer like close to a dozen of them. So WordPress is great. And they've got a 24/7 over-the-phone or live chat tech support, so if you need help, they're there for you. And they've got an intuitive and user-friendly control panel that puts the power of creation into your hands. Plus, a 99.99% uptime rating. So whether you want to launch a blog or a business website, it is up to you. Go to HostGator.com/FTL. Get that special offer of 50% off for Free Talk Live listeners like you. HostGator.com/FTL, like Free Talk Live. As we go to Eric, he is in Delray Beach, Florida, listening via the LRN.FM app on his smartphone. Go ahead, Eric.
Hi, gentlemen. How you doing?
Welcome. Thanks. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling just based on these the call that you had on previously. The guy was talking about, you know, that voting for libertarians is like somehow or the Libertarian Party is somehow counterproductive, and that Trump was, you know, seemingly the only or best choice
for
libertarians. Yeah, and I'm just puzzled by this whole thing, and I've just made some notes.
Okay.
I'm puzzled in that it seems endemic in the community that there's this division where there's, I don't know the exact percent, but for me, too many libertarians seem to be like hoodwinked by Trump. And the notes I made were, you know, he's absolutely a politician. You know, everything about his public and business life seems to be calculated and manipulative, gaming the system, buying, bribing politicians and for his, you know, his business interest and betterment. I mean, he's admitted to these things. Everything he does is political. Every tweet, every button pressed in the his public life is super calculated. He may not have held office yet, but I would say he's a master Machiavellian operator and politician, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I was agreeing with you.
I mean, the basic definition of politician is a person who is professionally involved in politics, especially as a holder of or a candidate for an elected office. I mean, you could argue that anybody running for office is by definition a politician. Now, the definition here uses the word professionally involved, so you know whether that means you're getting paid to do it or not, if that's a factor, I don't know. But you could argue that just by running for office that you are a politician.
I think it's hard to construe somebody that runs for city council that one time because he's really concerned about an issue mm-hmm. is therefore by definition politician. Now, somebody that, you know, goes out and raises tens of millions of dollars and gives right. themselves a salary while they're campaigning, yes, they are a politician.
Today, my friend referred to me as a politician because I got two friends going to war with one another, and I'm, you know, trying to bring this peace among them, and which I hopefully
that's
have
always
done.
Frustrating when
and,
that happens.
Oh yeah, and so I. You know, one of my buddies is like, well, you know, you're the right politician for that job. And, you know, I know what he meant, you know.
You're a negotiator in that case.
Yeah, definitely negotiating.
Now, one thing I'm glad you did mention about, you know, Trump not necessarily being, you know, that good of a candidate and some people being hoodwinked. There were some polling numbers that came out, and apparently his polling is still absolutely horrible. Only 44% of voters have a positive opinion of Trump.
Why would that have changed?
Because it almost always changes once somebody gets elected.
In a better way, meaning
yes, yes. Oh, okay. It always goes up. Historically, it has always gone up. For Trump, it actually went down a couple of points. 49% have a negative opinion. That did go down a little bit because he had steadily been over 50% with a negative opinion. So there are fewer people that have a negative opinion of him, but fewer people also have a positive opinion of him. And of people that voted for Trump, 14% don't have a favorable opinion of Donald Trump.
Hey, Eric, I know you said you had more notes. Go ahead. What else did you want to share?
Yeah, if I could. Okay, so this, you know, he's obviously a coercive individual. He's used lawsuits to attack, wear down, and financially drain his opposition, competition, critics, advocated for all sorts of insane libel laws. And the thing that I think is critical here is that he's made a calculated and what I believe is a manipulative and deceptive appeal to many people in the libertarian community by this alliance with Alex Jones, this conspiracy theory stuff, this, you know, bringing up 9/11, attacking Bush in the primaries, to where they're just like, oh my God, he's an anti-globalist. Mm. So despite the fact that he is a stated authoritarian, and libertarians don't vote for authoritarians, or shouldn't, you would think, right? He's framed this as, okay, well, I'm the enemy of your enemy, so I'm your friend. And even though I'm an authoritarian, because I say the word globalism, and because I've introduced skepticism of events and wars in since 9/11, that somehow it's all right to support me because my globalism, it's really, really rough. And I see parallels to when I first got into libertarianism in the late 80s, and then was kind of introduced to Rothbard, the whole 92 Buchanan, outreach to the rednecks kind of campaign. It's pretty startling.
Sounds familiar. You mean like Trump was kind of, his outreach was similar to Buchanan's outreach?
I do. And it was the same thing, trying to kind of co-opt these anti-elitist kind of...
you got to hand it to him. I mean, he is a brilliant guy. I mean, he does deserve a lot of credit for what he's accomplished here. Ultimately, right. I think that you're right. I think a lot of these folks who backed him, who considered themselves libertarians, are going to be sorely disappointed. And, if I'm proven wrong, then okay, fine. I'll admit that, where I'm wrong. But I think that he's just another person seeking power, and just because he doesn't have a long history of having that power in the same way that many politicians do who would run for the political office of president doesn't mean that he's not as power hungry as the rest of them.
Correct. That's my assessment. And as long as we have folks, and this is something that really has me listening to you guys, is constantly bringing up principle, we as libertarians, as anarchists, voluntarists, if we don't have principle, we have nothing. And, I saw that with Daryl's run, and, I'm not kissing butt here, but it was impressive. And it set him apart. And if we look at the Libertarian Party, it's obvious that we need to continue to reclaim it. I don't know what happened with Gary this year. I do, but I don't. He's not the candidate he was in 2012. But even at that, for what the gentleman brought up before, to say that Trump somehow was a more libertarian candidate than even a highly flawed Gary Johnson is just not correct.
Eric, thanks for your call tonight, man. I appreciate your thoughts and appreciate your call in here. The toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. I don't know about saving the National Libertarian Party, but the New Hampshire one's doing pretty good. It's Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live, and of course, you can bring up whatever you want. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We do have Skype, and the Skype username is lrn.fm. Tonight in studio, it's Ian,
Jay,
and Daryl.
Of course, you can join us online and get interactive over at freetalklive.com. It's a free site. A lot of the other talk show hosts in the talk radio business want to charge you for their websites, or they don't even have one. we've got a lot of features that they like to charge you for, all for free, including our webcam, which you can watch over at cam.freetalklive.com. When we're live, you can also find the archives of the cam version of the show on our Free Talk Live YouTube channel. And you can link to that over at cam.freetalklive.com. Plus, we got archives going back for a decade and other ways to get interactive, including the ability to actually submit show content or what you want to be on the show to the front page of the website, and then other listeners can vote on it. It's a Reddit-based system. It's all totally free, so go get interactive at freetalklive.com.
What I really like about the Free Talk Live website is I listen to Free Talk Live often. So I'll hear something that a friend of mine I would think would enjoy or like to hear. So I will literally go into the archives, and I will listen to it and find a spot, mm-hmm. and I will take and just send them a text message link to the archives and say, hey, you're going to like this at, 15 minutes and whatever. And quite often I get a response back like, oh, hey, that show was great. I listened to the whole thing. And it was, I know you told me to call, gave me this website and so forth. So I actually send them a link directly to an episode.
Right.
And I get them into it. And one of my friends, she's been listening a little bit. And first time she listened, she's like, wow, the commercials are gold. She's like, I don't like listening to regular radio because I can't stand the commercials, but I love the commercials.
It's very rare that anyone will comment or compliment positively towards commercials, but I appreciate that. Thank you. So our toll-free number here tonight, if you want to join us, 855-450-FREE. You know what? Since we're talking about Trump, or we were, since somebody had called in about it, a couple people, I actually have a news story here, and it's not a good one. And I realize that there have been some of these stories like, headline, Trump in the Federal Reserve, which is a very misleading headline. We discussed this recently. Yes. Trump has not said anything like that. When you actually read the article, all it is Trump met with someone from the Cato Institute who has written previously about ending the Federal Reserve. That's not a bad thing that Trump is talking to someone who believes in ending the Federal Reserve.
Right, but remember that Alan Greenspan, prior to becoming chairman of the Federal Reserve, supported a gold standard.
And then he changed.
Yes.
But Greenspan was a straight-up puppet for the Federal Reserve. Brett Von Ott, his School Sucks podcast.
Great show.
Yeah. So he's another one. I recommend his show to a lot of people. And so I've been telling a lot of people about the Trivium and stuff. And Brett does a really good show about that. And in the beginning, there's a whole thing with Alan Greenspan is basically interviewed by somebody who is literally has a, and Alan Greenspan's admitting how he would purposely, make answers up. And this is why he was appointed for this job, that
because he's deceptive.
These profound answers that two different news media sources would interpret them answers the totally different way. So if anybody wants to listen to this, do School Sucks podcast and just search Trivium. And it's the very first one. Brett talks about the Trivium, which is something that is awesome, especially if you have young children. School Sucks is a great resource, if you're bringing up kids. But anyways, and in the beginning of that, it's just so funny. And I love how Brett, he does such a good job putting his stuff together. But yeah, Greenspan's there. Yeah, that was my job. That's what I was supposed to do. I was supposed to make it so nobody knew what we were talking about.
Wow.
Just admitted it. He admits it in one of our intros of School Sucks podcast.
It's incredible.
It is.
So, SchoolSucksProject.com.
Yeah, SchoolSucksProject.com.
Website. So here's the news about Donald Trump. Again, one of the latest headlines. He apparently was meeting with Martin Luther King III, the son of slain civil rights leader Dr. Martin Luther King. They were discussing, of all things, a national voting ID card.
Oh, dear.
The meeting coincided with Martin Luther King Day, and King called it a constructive meeting about the, quote, broken election system. And we believe our solution, he says, will give everyone an ID. King's son wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post at the weekend about the broken electoral system that was hampered by legislative efforts to make it harder to vote. His solution is a national identification card, an idea supported by previous presidents and civil rights activists. And, of course, we know what happened the last time this came about. It was called Real ID. And it wasn't a total national ID card, but it was basically a federal standardization of state IDs.
Right, and Real ID also was not a, you have to have this to vote because the feds say you have to have this to vote.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not a voting ID. It was, here's standards that states need to adopt for driver's licenses.
So is this MLK's son
that's
that
right.
is endorsing this voter ID thing? Or is it?
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Wow. So MLK Jr., he's got to be rolling in his grave over this because, I mean, I think Martin Luther King understood the idea of liberty. And, you know, there's just nothing libertarian or even liberty or freedom about any kind of identification as far as I'm concerned, especially ID to vote.
No doubt about it. I mean, just because someone's son doesn't mean they hold all the beliefs of their father.
True.
We certainly learned that about Rand Paul when it comes to his dad, Ron Paul. They're very, very different, at least in what they say. So a little bit more here from the story. Many African-American leaders, writes RT.com, see the distribution of a free government ID as a critical boost to low-income Americans who cannot open a bank account without one. The lack of an ID not only makes it more difficult to vote in several states, but also often makes individuals dependent on check cashing operations that charge high commissions. King declined to get drawn into the Lewis Trump dispute, saying that, quote, in the heat of emotion, a lot of things get said on both sides. I don't know what the Lewis Trump dispute is. Not sure what that's referencing.
Nor do I.
But ultimately here, what we don't know right now is exactly what the proposal is on the table. But whatever it is, I'm against it. I don't want to see any kind of national ID, whether it's just for voting or whether it allows someone to open a bank account. I know that here in New Hampshire, you can go and get a voter ID that is different from the driver's license or state ID in that it actually says on it, only for voting purposes. So you can't, it doesn't even have your date of birth on it. You can't go into a liquor store and use that ID. You can't probably go into a bank and use that ID. So if all they're talking about is a voting ID, then that won't have the same abilities that this is talking about here, where the individual would be able to use it for anything else besides voting. But I suspect that it wouldn't just be for voting, because knowing the federal government, they would want more control over people's identities than they
Correct.
Currently
have. And I was actually in a couple of legislative hearings today on IDs. One of them would have modified the current statutes that apply in New Hampshire to college IDs. And when they first implemented this a couple of years ago, they put in a sunset provision of if the ID does not have an issuance date or an expiration date, it's good until September of 2018. The proposal would have stricken that, and the modifications, it basically streamlined the language. So I was okay with that aspect, but the striking the provision that was adopted 5 years ago to have this expire on September of 2018 for an ID that has neither an issuance or an expiration date, I testified against, and the sponsor of the bill is open to having her proposal take effect in September of 2018 so that there's not this problem. The secretary or the deputy secretary of state, rather, testified and said, if this passes, nobody's going to be disenfranchised because you can do this, 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 and this and still be able to vote. So, yeah, you can wind up having somebody fill out several additional pieces of paper, have a seat, wait on the moderator to come take their picture, attach the picture to the pieces of paper.
Right.
And that doesn't disenfranchise anybody. Well, you know what? Somebody might be in a hurry and might not be able to wait to do all of that extra stuff. So, yes, it will disenfranchise somebody. Mm. And further, courts have consistently ruled that just because there's an alternate means of doing something, generally this is in regards to free speech, but they've ruled that just because there's an alternative means does not mean that the government then gets to close off one method of being able to do something. Mm.
I guess we'll see how that one pans out.
There is a tremendous benefit to lacking ID. and the fact that if you don't have any identification, it makes it real difficult for a cop to like, you know, put the numbers and letters in the appropriate boxes on citations and tickets.
Sure.
So I find that to be fun, the fact that
it's
I don't have
a benefit to you.
Yeah,
is what
yeah. It's good.
Toll-free number tonight, 855-450-FREE. This is a scary idea, though. And again, here's Trump, your supposed, the caller earlier, supposed liberty guy, right? He's going to help liberty. Well, now he's talking about rolling out a national ID system, which, of course, he'll be able to push even further with the idea of a border wall and further border enforcement. Like, oh, you always have to have your papers on you. L3's coming up. Papers. The Free State Project has reached its goal of 20,000 liberty lovers who've pledged to move to New Hampshire and get active to achieve liberty in our lifetime. Perhaps you're trying to figure out what part of New Hampshire should be your destination. If so, consider Keene. You'll find more than 150 reasons to move to Keene at move.freekeene.com. Keene is famous for its historic, publicity-generating activism, as well as being the liberty media capital of the world. It's home to freekeene.com, New Hampshire's destination for liberty activism, news, and opinion. For years, we've been compiling over 150 reasons to move to Keene at move.freekeene.com, where you'll learn about some of what's happening here and what makes Keene a great place to live. If you love liberty, you'll probably enjoy anywhere you end up in the Shire. But do your due diligence first. Please visit move.freekeene.com for the full list of over 150 reasons to move to Keene. That's move.freekeene.com.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. And, of course, you can join us here. The toll-free number is 855-453. That's 855-450-3733. We do have Skype, and the Skype username is lrn.fm. In the studio tonight, it's Ian.
Jay.
And Daryl.
Let's go to your calls and thoughts. And then coming up, one woman reveals what it's like to sleep with a male sex doll. And, Daryl, you've got a related story about sex robots.
Yes.
Coming up here. But first, we go to Arizona, where James is on the line via Skype. Go ahead, James. Hello.
Mother, should I trust the government? Mother, should I run for president? I love how much a preacher that lies, Daryl W. Perry, has in common with Barry Obama.
Well, he's what not, if Daryl lied about? I never heard, never caught him in a lie. I talk to him all the time.
Hello, James. Are you going to have a conversation here? Guess not. I think maybe he's having a bad connection. He was sounding kind of crappy there at the beginning of the call. Thanks for the call. Toll-free number here, 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. He's perpetually angry, Jay,
yeah, I mean,
about something that some of us have said over time. He doesn't like that there's a website that lists him as having three DUIs, which we've talked about here on Free Talk Live. He denies that those things are true, so on and so forth. And I don't know what his current issue is with Daryl, and I really don't care.
It seems like he's just a professional troll. I don't know.
You think he's just trolling?
Well, I don't. I mean, he does a lot of research, actually.
Yeah.
You know, or he claims to. He presents it like he's done a lot of research. I don't know why he's so angry and what his deal is. I mean, he doesn't like Ron Paul. You know, he's always very. He referred to me and Ron Paul being rotten to the core. So he compared me to Ron Paul. I really felt honored, but you know, he don't like Ron Paul for some reason. I think Ron Paul's awesome.
Well, I mean, plenty of people don't like freedom, and
yeah,
I guess he's one
too.
Of those people. Toll-free number tonight, 855-450-FREE. The story's coming from The Sun over in the UK. Glancing at the man lying next to her, Carly Ciortino nestles into his neck. Then she runs her fingers down his chiseled abs, stopping just short of the large bulge in his pants. Straddling his muscular body, Carly slowly leans down and tentatively kisses his perfect lips on his perfect face. Her companion is so handsome, he almost seems too good to be true, and that's because he is. His name is Gabriel, and he's a 5'9", 5,000 British pound price, silicone doll. And Carly, a single 31-year-old writer from New York, is testing out his full skills for a documentary about male sex dolls.
Dun, dun, dun.
In the end, she spends approximately 20 minutes getting intimate with Gabriel. She explains, quote, "We always assume men are more likely to enjoy sleeping with an object and that women need some sort of emotional connection to enjoy themselves. But that isn't always the case, she says. Further, she said, these dolls are 100% silicone, which makes the penis feel incredibly lifelike. At times, it was indistinguishable from a real one.
You know, this kind of reminds me of an episode of Black Mirror.
Oh, yeah, you showed me one of those episodes before. It's a Netflix series, right?
It is. It started off as a British, I think it was British Channel 4.
And they remade it?
And then Netflix picked it up.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an episode to where, and, you know, it just sort of, you know, spoiler warning sort of thing, if you're not familiar with the show. Each episode is standalone, and it's kind of
different
like
characters,
Twilight
different Zone kind of thing.
Kind of like a Twilight Zone, but they're recurring themes, so it revolves around technology.
Okay.
And there's one of the episodes where this woman's, I forget if it's fiance or spouse, but, you know, her significant other winds up dying, and she finds out that there's this thing that you can buy that will basically create an animatronic version of your loved one.
Hmm.
And she gets intimate with the thing in an episode, and or, you know, obviously it's in the episode, but, you know, at one point during the episode she gets intimate with it, and it's just really interesting because, you know, like, she knows this is not actually my significant other. It's
right.
Just this, you know, robot version of. But, yeah, just very interesting.
It deals with those issues.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see more of this kind of stuff, and, you know, people trying to come to grips with the idea that they could be replaced by a thing.
Well, I can see where the market would exist for, you know, especially, you know, male, you know, companion sex robots, because a lot of men aren't even really men anymore. I really believe that society, the men, the boys in society have become like emotionally and chemically, you know, castrated. I mean, with, you know, the stuff in the food, with the fact of the, you know, the schooling system, you know, is like mentally, you know, castrating the men. And there's very few like real men out there. And one thing I noticed when I was in Colorado is that the Mexican men, you know, were pretty good. I really admired them a
more
lot.
More manly is
oh,
what you're saying.
Very much manly. They treated their women, you know, the way I believe, you know, a man should treat a woman. They were very respectful of women in general. Like these guys I would hang out with would make it a point for just strange women to open a door for them, to be extra polite and courteous. And they were very much about standing up and protecting, you know, women and children and even maybe, you know, younger men.
Most people would wind up calling that white knight. They're white knighting the women.
Well, I mean, that's just the way they are. But like the Mexican culture definitely has, you know, better quality men than actual, you know, this English white, you know, whatever you want to call, you know, Americans are. And I've noticed that because like one thing in Colorado is there was like a lot of negative sentiment that, you know, oh, the girls are all going for the Mexicans. Well, the Mexican guys are doing a better job.
Yeah, apparently they know what they're doing.
You know, yeah, than these white guys. But just in my experience, the maturity level of the average male, the man, it keeps on getting like pushed along. I mean, you know, there's like these 25 to 30 year old men that I know, and even men my age, I'm 37, that like their maturity level, as far as I'm concerned, is really low. They don't know how to deal with women. And
well, there's a term for them that cannot be said on FCC licensed radio, but they're basically called F-boys. Just the guys that all they want to do, they don't care about anything but just have sex. And there's a lot of women that they know that that's all the guys want, and they go for it. And then when somebody does wind up, you know, opening the door and, you know, being what we grew up with called being a gentleman, they're like, oh, that guy's such a beta.
And even like one kid I was talking with, he's a friend of mine. He's 10 years younger than me. And he was telling me about some issues with his girlfriend. You know, she's like, oh, she can't, you know, have an orgasm or something. And I was explaining to him about, like, you know, this chemical process that kind of has to occur in order for that to even be possible. And I was explaining to him how, like, you know, these things with women, you know, feeling loved and women being able to nurture. And there's just like, there's actually really like a whole element of like what you would be basically the whole, you know, 1930s to like 1950s, like courtship thing. And like how that would be like classically drawn, you know, or, you know, presented is, you know, gets women excited when, you know, men are like that. Mm-hmm. And so I went into, you know, explaining this to him and he had a hard time wrapping his head around it. We talked about it quite a bit, actually. And it's just, I was thinking to myself, wow, man, this guy's like, he's 27 years old. You know, there's, you know, a lot of, you know, I mean, my younger brother, you know, became a father when he was, you know, 19, my youngest brother. And he's had this man thing figured out, you know, from a young age and has done really well. And this other guy who's, you know, older than him is like not even close.
Doesn't get it.
But, you know, he was like, you know, I'm sure he was vaccinated, drank, you know, the fluoridated water and definitely went to public school. And his parents probably didn't debrief him. You know,
I didn't get anything from my parents about all that. So, I mean, I can't say I'm the best with women, but yeah, I've got a girlfriend right now. So I guess that's a good thing.
I'm saying the parents debriefing him from the public school stuff. I mean, that's what my dad did with us is like, you know, taught us to challenge it. So I don't know.
The toll free number here is 855-450-FREE. I asked my parents once if I could go out on a date and they told me no. So that was the end of that. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live, and you can bring up anything you want here. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. You get your online shopping done by going through shop.freetalklive.com. That's shop.freetalklive.com. Links to Amazon there. When you click into those links, those are our affiliate links. So once you do that, you get your shopping taken care of. Free Talk Live gets a cut of the sale. And it's very helpful for us when you do that. You get the same great deals, the same products that you would have gotten through just going normally to Amazon. You're just going through our affiliate link. So they send us a portion of their profits, which otherwise they would keep all for themselves. So if you want to help Free Talk Live, this is one of the easiest ways to do it because you're going to get the stuff you want anyway. Why not send some of it to us? Shop.freetalklive.com. That's shop.freetalklive.com. We're talking about relationships. Well, actually, what started the discussion about relationships was an article at The Sun about a woman discussing her experience being with, sexually, presumably, a sex doll.
Yes.
And
which is different from the sex robots.
And we can talk about the sex robots coming up here. The sex doll is kind of, you know, what's coming before the sex robots, basically. Like, the sex robots are just around the corner. The sex dolls are here now. So we're going to get into that here a little bit more. Mike, though, is on the line in Ohio. You're on Free Talk Live, watching us on our webcam at cam.freetalklive.com. Go ahead, Mike.
Thanks, Ian.
Hey there.
So I like J Noon a lot, and I actually used to live in Denver.
Oh, cool.
As well. So I can. But you're a good dude. But I got to disagree with everything that you said about the women thing.
All right.
Thank you.
It's the exact opposite. Honestly, I was terrible with women for most of my life, and then about 5 or 6 years ago, I actually started watching internet videos on YouTube and you know, learning how do I have sex with women. And what I ultimately boiled down to was every woman I found attractive, I would go approach and talk to. So literally, I disciplined my brain every time I saw a woman I was attracted to. So it would literally be about, it could vary from 7 or 8 approaches a day to, if I went to a club, 150.
Wow.
Within a 3
Hold
or 4
on.
Hour.
So you're talking the women that you only find physically attractive and you know nothing about.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so by doing this, you get better with your interactions with women, and it's not like anyone can take these steps. And what I found was women like a dude who's like on his own purpose and journey, and they really, really don't like any sort of neediness. And I think a lot of women, if you're opening doors and if you're trying to romance them like in the 1940s, it doesn't work. What you can do is, in my opinion, what I would advise all the guys out there to do is to literally just get as many interactions with women as possible and see what that creates for you and what it will create. And if anybody doesn't take my word for it, just try these things. It will create an abundance with women, because if you're constantly approaching, you're going to have women go on dates with you. You're going to have women be romantic with you. And what it does is it detaches you from neediness. You already come from a place of abundance with women, and then other women can sense that, and it's a domino effect.
Okay, so let me just sort of ask a question here, to where you said that people interpret you opening a door for a woman as you being needy. I open doors for everybody if I'm near the door.
Yeah, I don't discriminate males, females.
Does everybody think that therefore I'm needy because I'm a decent human being?
No. I do the same thing, and you could probably do it with women also. But the whole romancing women and doing all this kind of, it doesn't work like that. A lot of women, believe it or not, I mean, I would say 20% of women. I mean, guys, I had relationships with married women that were like normal, had kids, would never, and they were like some of the wildest, nastiest. And a lot of women almost want to be not respected. They want to be somebody's just.
Yeah, that's true. You know, that's true.
Whatever.
Well, and women are different, you know, right? So maybe Jay has had success with his approach and has found the women that appreciate that, and you've had success with your approach. Is it possible that could be true?
It could be true. And what I was talking about, like the 1930s, 1940s style, like approach, I was just giving an example of the Mexican men that I hung out with in Colorado. We, you know, the guys I worked for and did jobs for had a lot of Mexican help. And them guys, I really liked them guys. And I just appreciated that they, like, compared to the jihadist, you know, so the two kinds of people I worked with in Colorado were Mexicans and these jihadist Republican white farmers. And like, I would so much rather my sister or my daughter be with one of these Mexican guys that was an illegal alien that was making, you know, $1,800 a month than be with one of these, you know, jihadist Republicans who had, you know, types just had no respect really for anybody at all. You know, not just women, I don't think I was saying that's like the way to go about it. I was just giving it as an example that culture that hasn't been Americanized. From a man, you know, from the men,
right?
You know,
and there's
women seem, you know, good, decent women seem to be attracted to them. I mean, there's good and bad, and, you know, men and women everywhere,
right? And there's also the sort of aspect to where, you know, a lot of times people are attracted to something that is different and unusual.
Absolutely.
And a foreign man or foreign woman's going to be different than what you're used to.
And
so, you know, like the Mexican men are going to probably wind up doing a little bit better with American women in Colorado.
But what he's saying is that the Mexican men aren't pussified and that was a factor.
Right. Right. I would say
women
that,
do like confidence, right? Like that's definitely across the board a true thing about women.
Men, the more you act like a man, and that doesn't mean being disrespectful. That doesn't mean any of that.
Mm-hmm.
But what you see on Disney TV shows and the girl falls for the guy who's clumsy and this and that, that's not true.
Mm.
That's one of those mainstream narratives, just like government is our friend. It's not true. The more you act like a man, the more there is coordination with how you act, how you feel, how you think, your confidence. You're always the party.
Right, but I have to ask what you mean by act like a man. Do you mean act like the guy? What's the movie where the guy goes and stands outside of the chick's bedroom holding up the stereo?
I have no idea.
That only worked because he was not a bad-looking guy. Like, if he were an ugly guy, the cops would show up and he would be arrested as a stalker. So what do you mean, act like a man?
Well, okay, let's go into something specific. You say you've approached, you know, hundreds of women. You'll approach them whenever you see them as attractive. So, grocery store, attractive woman, what do you do?
I go up to her and I'll either make conversation just randomly how I'm feeling, or if she's walking the other way, I might stop and walk with her. If I can't think of anything to say, I'll just be like, excuse me, my name's, you know, Mike. You're adorable. I want to say hi. And then go from there. And, you know, so sometimes women are like, oh, I'm not interested. But the more you do it,
It's a numbers game. It's a numbers game, right?
It's definitely a,
the more number, the more you throw it out there, the more you're likely to get a bite on the hook, so to speak.
And the more you're likely to get rejected, which
well, you have to get rejected.
Self ego.
Well, you have to get rejected in order to do this approach. I mean, it's the numbers game. You're going to get rejected probably more often than you don't. Mike, if you want to continue to share your techniques, you're welcome to here. I think Daryl might have more questions. What do you shop for that you could otherwise buy at Amazon? Pretty much everything, right? Amazon has competitive pricing and they deliver, and that's a big plus. If you could plan ahead in your shopping, would you be interested in saving up to 33%? There's a catch. You have to do your shopping in Bitcoin, but imagine those savings. It's like a huge raise. All you have to do is go to saveitpurse.com. We've saved thousands, and you can too. Plan ahead and save. Saveitpurse.com. It's Free Talk Live, and you can take control of the airwaves toll free. Our number here is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We're talking about relationships. We actually started a news story here about the, not sex robot, but a sex doll, a male sex doll that a woman is describing or was describing her experience with. We haven't actually finished that, but it ended up launching us into a conversation about real relationships with human beings, which for now people are still having because, well, the sex robots and sex, well, sex robots aren't really here yet, but they're probably coming soon. And the sex dolls are pretty pricey. This is a 5,000-pound silicon doll. That's
5,000 British pounds.
Right, not the weight of the doll. I don't know how much he weighs, but he's 5'9". He's 5,000 pounds in cost, and we can tell you more about him coming up here and her experience with him in moments. But Mike called in from Ohio, and he is saying that he's kind of calling in to disagree with Jay on
and
how
I
to
like
approach
it when
women.
People disagree with me,
yeah.
Because it gives me an opportunity to reevaluate and hopefully, you know, prove whatever I'm saying wrong. But I think you kind of misunderstood what I said. I was just saying that the Mexicans are more like what would, you know, be a 1940s or 50s like American man, you know.
And Mike, you're saying that you go anytime you're out and about, whether it's at a grocery store or a club or wherever it is you are in the streets, and you see an attractive woman, somebody that you find attractive, you will talk to them. And then you were giving us an example of what you might say. And Daryl, you're a skeptic here. You're saying, you said this off the air, you said this is some sort of pickup artist thing, and you don't believe it.
It definitely sounds like a pickup artist thing. I don't buy it, and I don't know if I want to have a conversation with somebody just because she looks pretty. Like, I have to know something about the person to know if I would even want to waste my time having a conversation, and I mostly find small talk to be boring and pointless.
A physical...
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair, but the reason that you do it with that is because it pushes comfort zones. When you break comfort zones, that's how you really grow. And if you'll put yourself in situations like that, where, listen, I've done it where there's five women all together. I've done it in nightclubs with not a couples, but with a girl dancing with a guy. I'll go up to the couple, put my arms around both of them, ask the girl if she's with him. If she says no, I'll say, let me borrow you for a minute, and pull her away.
Pull her away.
Yeah, if she consents to giving me her hand, I will take her from the guy, and the look on his face is like pure outrage. But the reason I do that, the reason I do that is because it pushes comfort zones. If you can deal with those kind of environments, you can deal with any kind of environment, and you can hold yourself with good social acuity and demeanor and all those things. And it is pickup stuff. But there's a company, and I don't work for them or anything. I don't deal, so I'm no expert. And I listen, all I've done is take massive action. I'm not better than anybody. Anybody can do this. If I've slept with 100 women, it doesn't make me any better than anybody that's a virgin. It doesn't matter. It matters none. But there's a company I would encourage you and anyone. It's called Real Social Dynamics, and it teaches the social interactions between all sorts of people. And it's not just with men and women. It's in sales. It's in men and men relationships. It's kind of about being a better person. And just one aspect to do that in is in relationships with women. If you're a man, especially if you're coming from kind of a dark place with it, like you know, you didn't play football in high school, you know, you weren't naturally good with girls, you didn't have that natural confidence. Well, I would say that game or pickup, or however you want to classify it, it actually over delivers. It's one of those rare things in life where if you do it a lot, the results will be outstanding. I used to think that the only way you could get a quote unquote 10 or whatever, at least in my eyes, was if you had a lot of money. Okay, if you do this stuff enough, it will make you realize that money matters none, looks matter none. None of that matters none. It's how you make the people feel. It's how you make the women feel.
All right, tell me this. So, yeah. Okay, how long have you been going at this approach, this tactic?
Years.
How many years?
4 to 5 years.
4 to 5 years. How's it been? I mean, is it just that you're looking for sex, or are you looking for a relationship?
No. Okay, I'm open to anything with anybody. Like, I enjoy offering value to people. I enjoy learning from others. And I've met so many cool people along the way. Have I had these crazy sexual experiences? Yes, I've had stuff that blew my mind. Stuff I couldn't even go to sleep that night because I was like, oh, my God, did this just happen? But I've also got to know some awesome women along the way. And I've been able to do things in my career and professional things, being free of outcome, being not filtered, being free to express myself in ways I could have never done if I wouldn't have went up to this beautiful woman who's like way taller than me in a club and was like, hey, what's your name? Come here. And just did that stuff over and over again where I've trained my brain, you're going to do what I say. You're not going to let groupthink or society bother you. You're going to do what's best for you.
Now, it's one thing to meet a new person, but to keep a relationship going entails a whole different set of sort of aspects and tactics and techniques. And right. How's that gone for you? What's the longest relationship that you've had out of this 4 or 5 years?
Four and five years. I still have multiple relationships going, and those women know how I am. I tell women I am not monogamous.
So you're in an open relationship. With multiple women.
I'm in an open relationship, yeah.
So do you cohabitate with one or more than one?
No.
Okay.
And everywhere I've lived, I've met great, awesome women I still am in contact with, and it's through going up to them randomly. I don't know them. They're not a friend of a friend. It's just random strangers, and then here we go. And you know, look, I get rejected 90% of the time.
90%.
90%, okay? But let me tell you something. If you go out on a Saturday night and you approach 100 people and then Sunday morning you're at the store and you approach another 10 or you're at the park or wherever, you're going to create a good, you know, for the lack of a better term, harem of women that you can get to know, you can grow with. They can make you a better man because women can point out faults in a man. They can give you kind of a breakdown of yourself you can't get from your buddy.
Which is really good, actually. I totally agree with the women friends pointing out faults at you and helping you along. And, you know, if you're the kind of guy that can, you know, that can handle that, you know, some women are definitely afraid to, you know, kind of criticize, you know, their guy friends because they can't handle it. But if you're a guy that can handle, you know, constructive criticism, which I can. So I've had a lot of friends of mine that are women in my life that have, you know, they've been like, hey, Jay, you know, why don't you do this a little bit? Or, you know,
why don't you shave?
You know, some girls are like, well, I don't like beards. And some girls are like, I like beards.
Yeah, that's
then
true.
I like the clean shaven look. But yeah, that's constructive.
That's because women are different.
Well, everybody's different.
Well, yeah,
but
of course.
Yeah.
Of course. But it's always interesting to hear from the pickup guys because, you know, they always have interesting stories and they really swear by their techniques. And how many times has a guy, one of those guys you've pulled a girl away from, tried to fight you?
I've had guys get in my face and push me away, but I've never been assaulted or anything like that. And you know, I'm not beyond dumb about it if a guy's clearly intoxicated or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But usually, mostly, if a girl's not with a guy,
yeah,
then I think the biggest mistake people make is they see a guy with a girl and think they're automatically together. 90% of the time, 95% of the time, they're not. They're either friends or they just met, and if you go up with a cool vibe about you, You're not threatening anybody. You're just sharing your personality. You can pull the girls away, you know. And like I said, this is nothing anyone can't do, but it starts with just taking massive action. Always choose courage. When you're at the store, you see a girl, and let me tell you something, looks matter zero. Now listen,
why do you only approach the attractive women? If looks don't matter, approach every woman
looks.
And try to pick up every single woman.
He's saying his looks don't matter. Obviously, attraction matters.
He said looks don't matter. So hit on the ugly chicks, too.
But why? You don't want to be with them.
But looks don't matter, Ian.
Hold on. We'll let him respond here in moments. I don't think that's what he was saying there. We'll come back. It's Free Talk Live. Yep, it's Free Talk Live. Moments remain here. Enough time for you if you dial in now. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We're talking about, it was going to be sex dolls, but it became a conversation about meeting women. And Mike in Ohio has been practicing, pickup techniques for the last 4 or 5 years. And he says it's been a real boon to him that he's had a lot of success and has cultivated multiple relationships with many beautiful women as a result of that. And so we're going to bring him back here because, Daryl, you had a question for him about, he said, it doesn't matter what was it that
he said? Looks don't matter. But you approach every woman you find attractive. And my question is, if looks don't matter, then why not hit on the women that you find not so attractive?
Okay, so I treat everybody the same. Whether it's a 70-year-old woman or a woman I find attractive, and attractive is subjective. It's up to the person. So like
you flirt with the 70-year-old women as well?
Absolutely, because here's why. If I don't treat everybody the same and I don't casually have fun and flirt with a 70-year-old woman, then when I'm talking to that 8 or 9, my mind is frozen because I've invested too much in that one interaction. So
how often do you hook up with 70-year-old women?
Never. But if that's someone's thing, I don't judge them. I treat everybody the same. And when I say looks don't matter, I mean my looks.
Right.
Women don't even ask me what I do for a living. They don't look at the car I drive. These are all things that 5 years ago, I thought these were the only things that mattered. And then until I actually started getting out there and doing this stuff, I realized it matters zero. Now, look. If you don't shower for 3 days, you can scare
that's
them off
matter.
And run away. And you have to have some social calibration about, you know, what you're doing and saying. But over time, you can hone all those things. And it's not even really like pickup techniques. It's really you change the person that you are. You become a better version of yourself. You're not scared. You're not fearful. You're happy with yourself, and you want to show your personality to everybody. You get that confidence, you do those things. And listen, I hope as many people, as many guys go out there and do this as possible.
So what's the name of the pickup artist that you've learned from?
There's a company called Real Social. Yeah, Real Social Dynamics. I haven't really learned from one. This was 4 or 5 years ago. They were kind of the big ones on the market. They have some controversial stuff. You know, you don't have to agree with everything they do. You can take bits and pieces from all kind of different stuff.
So, Mike, it sounds like you're not looking to find a woman to like settle down with and raise a family with. I mean, that's kind of my goal. That's what I'm looking for. I'm not looking to like run around with a bunch of different girls or be like Polly or any of that stuff. I don't really have any interest in it. I'm kind of, you know, I don't need much. I don't want any more confusion in my life or complexity.
One's complicated enough, I think, in my experience.
But I mean, so Mike, so it sounds like you're not looking for that. Correct me if I'm wrong. And also the other part of the question is when you do find yourself like having a connection with a woman who is looking for like, you know, that kind of relationship, wants to settle down, and have kids or something. I'm sure since you're, you know, you're doing all this hunting out there, you got to find them too, because you're saying hi to all of them. What do you do with her? I mean, do you tell her what your deal is? Do you, I mean.
Yeah. So I'm open to all of it. I have such good close relationships with women now. It's like I'm in long-term relationships. And so I'm open to all of it. Women pretty much know. If you go up to a woman that you don't know, and within 10 minutes you have her phone number, the best thing to do isn't even phone numbers. It's actually have instant dates right there. It's meet a woman and then spend the next 2 or 3 hours with her. You know, and women kind of know. They kind of know this doesn't happen every day. So
who's
they
got that much free time to have impromptu dates
for three hours? That's exactly that's what why. Happened to me. I met a girl, literally met a girl. First night in town, we were throwing hay and spent like 3 hours. Two, three hours.
By throwing hay, you literally were throwing hay. That's what you do. I didn't know if anyone thought that was some kind of innuendo or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So, yeah, we were stacking hay. I had to unload one of my hay trailers on a farm. And I meet this amazing girl there. And that's what happened there. Just like a couple hours after we're done throwing hay, we end up just chatting it up for a few hours. And then the next night, I go back. I just stop by there because you know, I wanted to see her, and we do. Yeah, we chatted up for a few, like 3-4 hours. You know, literally the next night. And
well, it's
know,
obviously it's cool. not going to work, Daryl, in every instance. I mean, a lot of times the girl at a grocery store's got somewhere to go after that, right? So it's not. Yeah.
Right. That's why I'm saying, you know, like who has that much free time to just, you know, like every time you meet somebody, hey, let's have a 3-hour date right now.
So if the connection's strong enough,
I've got stuff enough, to do.
If the connection's strong enough. I kind of get what Mike's saying. If the connection's strong enough, there's going to be, you know, reason to stay and you know, continue the connection. Especially if it's strong, you know, feeling strong for both parties.
Go ahead, Mike.
I work 14 to 16 hours a day. I don't have much time either. But I can tell you this, after 4.5 years, that's why you go after the girls. That's why I go after the ones I find really attractive, because those are the ones I'll spend time in. There's also times when I'm in work for 3 or 4 days, I don't leave the house. So you don't have to do this nonstop 24/7. But the more that you do it, the better you get in those social interactions with women, the more results you will have. And like I said, it's just about being a better person, because you usually attract the kind of people that you are. You are what you attract.
That's a true statement.
So if you become a better person by learning about liberty, learning about offering value to others, learning about loving and just appreciating every person on this planet equally, then all those aspects together is what leads to growth, and that's why I hope to share this, and I hope everybody does this. So,
Mike, thanks for sharing that tonight, dude. I really appreciate you getting into detail on your experience. That's Mike in Ohio. Let's go to Socrates. He's in Nashua, New Hampshire, on via Skype. Go ahead, Socrates.
Well, just to add to that last caller, I've actually met with Tyler from Real Social Dynamics. My relationship that I've had, I've started it with pickup, and it's in libertarian land. It's now a 7-year relationship. My girlfriend actually tried to talk to Daryl a couple of years ago in regards to actually trying to get him to watch Real Social Dynamic videos. None of my part. Daryl, I think you know who I'm speaking of if I refer to a girl named Liz. However, Liz, my girlfriend, actually does it herself and actually uses RSD to actually talk to other girls because she has a hard time making friends with girls. And because she's bisexual, she actually uses the strategies in Real Social Dynamics to be able to actually pick out girls that she's interested in. And because she has such the discomfort trying to actually break into like a quote unquote friend zone. And for any situation, right, the only downside to not using pickup is to try to validate yourself to a girl and try to like illustrate your self worth rather than just being yourself. And that's really what pickup teaches all of us. I just wanted to add in a great call.
You said you've been with a girl 7 years that you met with a pickup line. What was the circumstance?
It wasn't a pickup line. It was I just used game.
Techniques,
so
game,
whatever. So the circumstances
whatever.
Were that I was at, she met me in my ex-girlfriend's house. And the first thing I said is, hey, my name, like, just casually, hi, nice to meet you. There's no pickup line needed. But I'm Brian. I'm Katarina's ex-boyfriend. Just to let you, and from there on out, I think it was 3 weeks later, we met up a couple more times, and we started dating. And we've been living together for 6 years, and we've been dating for 7 years. And we have a very strong relationship. And if it wasn't for pickup, I definitely wouldn't have found her.
You mean you wouldn't have had the confidence to speak to her in the first place?
And she has a natural guard. So anyone that tries to validate themselves there with, like, by bragging about how much money they have or trying to talk to her as an old person, she has suspicion. So by using game and by teasing her, it was able to, like, let her guard down so I could get closer. And, like, once I got closer, I didn't push her away. Like, I wasn't trying to go to the next girl because I found her very interesting, fun to be around.
Good, man. So thanks for sharing your story. Appreciate that, Socrates. Thanks, man, for the call tonight. It's been Ian here with you.
And Jay.
And Daryl.
We will see you tomorrow night online in the meantime. And don't forget to check more Daryl out over at libertylobby.info. See you tomorrow. Why did you move to the Shire?
I moved here to the Shire because there's other people around who take liberty just as seriously as I do.
I moved to the Shire because I saw videos of people challenging authority and thought that I could get support myself. It called to me, like, do this right now.
I wanted to be around people like me who got it. And once I got here, I knew there was nowhere else that I wanted to be.
I've always wanted to change the world. So I moved to the Shire to join people who were actually working towards doing the same thing.
The people here are awesome, loving, and positive. It was for the adventure and for the feeling of something important is happening here. And I just wanted to come to sort of be part of that.
Visit ShireSociety.com to read and sign the Shire Society Declaration and learn the reasons why, if you love liberty, you should immigrate to the Shire. Plus, add yourself to the Shire map at ShireSociety.com. That's ShireSociety.com.